Obstetrics and Gynecology at the Brooklyn Jewish Hospital. That was a doctor, Benjamin Gilson, a very reputable when he was asked, Dr. Andy, by his doctor colleagues, why he himself didn't do it, and I was present when he had said, he said, look, you know how many births and how many deliveries there are and how many I officiate, but what this man does in a week, I don't do in a year when it comes to circumcision. So he acknowledged that there was a technical expertise that, that the mohel does have simply by virtue of the number of procedures that he does. Nonetheless, am I going to convince a mother who just gave birth, who will squawk and lose a night's sleep when the child will go, all right, let alone open up its mouth and start crying? It's impossible to convince such a person. Nonetheless, we the faithful maintain that this is an initiation rite of the highest sanctity, and it's not a surgical procedure. If you happen to be a physician and you want to do it, you are not doing it as a physician. You are doing it as a representative of the Jewish continuum of history that started with Avraham Avinu, with Abraham, our first Jew. Who had a comment? Yes?
I have a question that has nothing to do with the birth order. A friend of ours just had a baby recently, and she went into labor on Shabbos, went into the hospital, and they told her it was false labor, go home. And she couldn't go home, so they spent the night in the car. Yeah. Under those circumstances, that's what
they spend the night in the car?
In the station wagon.
Where is her brain?
Wait, was this in the New York metropolitan area or any type of... jokes. They should tell the hospital, it's Shabbos, we ain't going nowhere. The hospital would have let them stay.
In the lobby, they told him to go home.
And you tell them, I can't.
You can sit in the lobby even.
But you tell them, I can't.
A woman in her ninth month? Forget the hospital. Where was the seichel of the partner?
That's what they did. That's what they did.
That is a new one. I've never...
You have to get a place in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not allowed to go home, really.
You tell them, I ain't going. No, I went in on Shabbos with David, okay? And I wasn't going anywhere. David says, listen, I understand the Shabbos. I know you can't go anywhere. I'm not going to hang out. That's it. I sat there, and he said, they're not, most hospitals don't kick you out if they understand the situation. Mm-hmm. You tell them you can't go anywhere, they're not going to kick you out. They're not going to send you home to walk a mile.
I will say this. If you want to compare the general hospital under Jewish auspices, general, there are two exceptions, with the general hospital under Catholic auspices, you know where we are much more comfortable. Good Samaritan Hospital in Suffern, New York. Good Samaritan has a whole procedural manual for dealing with the patients and the visitors to the patients of frum families. Okay? It's interesting to note along this line, and then we'll get back to Briz. In St. Joseph's in Patterson and in St. Mary's in Passaic, there is a chapel available for prayer. In Beth Israel Kosher Hospital, there is no prayer corner. Okay, but I'm talking about, St. General is a secular hospital, fine. I'm talking about two hospitals under specifically religious identity.
When you say a chapel, you mean for Jewish people.
No.
In general.
When my
Daniel was in St. Joseph's 10 years ago, so they admitted him, the first thing that after the medical admitting that went on was, Rabbi, if you want to conduct services, we will prepare a room for you to do anything and everything. You just tell us what you need. That was it. In Beth Israel Hospital, when I have to come to read the Megillah for the patients, I have to use the office of a social worker who's not there. And what happens if four wheelchairs can't go in?
Well, how come this was, no one ever did anything about that?
Oh, that's a question I can't answer.
Why don't we do something right now?
Okay? We tried when they built the new building to have such a thing. And the answer was, we want to keep our image as a non-sectarian.
But a chapel doesn't have to be
sectarian.
Maybe you just want a room.
Let's get back to Bris Mila, okay? Yeah. We are the harbingers of logic. The Einsteins of the world must have some kind of screwed up mechanism over there, a spring that makes us crazy when it comes to our own. That's the fourth line. The mole placing the child upon the sandek's knee. The sandek is the one who holds the child. In case you don't know, it is the chief honor. The mole gets the honor of doing things because he has technical expertise. The sandek, who is the assistant, is the chief honor that you give to a person. Okay? That is incorrect. Although my friend Birnbaum usually does things correctly, he is fudging something. You don't say Zeakise Shel Eliyahu when you place the child on the sandik's knees. It's done before. There is a separate procedure. Kise Shel Eliyahu is the throne or the chair for Elijah. Well, you've known all along that Eliyahu HaNavi would get what on the table? A kos. A cup of Eliyahu at the Seder.
Yeah.
Okay. But what is this Kisei Shel Eliyahu?
In most European synagogues, there is a special chair.
And it's placed, the Kisei Shel Eliyahu, the chair for Eliyahu, is placed right
Excuse
next.
Excuse me, can I make a clue? I've got to close that with Mohammed Taj. He wasn't humble.
If Jerry Parkoff will get angry for that comment on tape, then that's all right.
If one comment passion in his box, what? I'm going to have to lift the ball.
So then again, you know, again I say to you that what you read isn't emes min hashamayim. It's just, if you were to read this carefully, you would say that this is it. It's, I mean, this is the way you do it. Let me explain something to you. Although I'm not going to go into an entire diatribe on Eliyahu HaNavi, but you've got to understand the personality of Eliyahu HaNavi. There is a quality of defiance wherein we have defied the entire world and have done things differently. And we stood up to the entire world in that defiance. We've been marked with it. That is representative of the personality of Eliyahu HaNavi. If you read the original source in the Tanakh of what Eliyahu HaNavi had to suffer, he had to suffer a Jewish king by the name of Ahab with a wife who was evil incarnate, Jezebel. The devil himself was afraid of Jezebel, so to speak. And these were the Jewish kings al Yisrael over Israel. They went ahead and they assembled amongst themselves and around themselves rabbis, we call them Kohanim, priests, who in the Nevi'ei HaBaal, who specifically were put there to take the Jewish people and teach them how to worship idolatry in Yerushalayim. Eliyahu HaNavi was the only one who stood up against him, because he was a loner and he had the guts to swim against the stream. For that, and he won in the end, for that he is indelibly recorded in history at certain points. Number one, the night of the Seder, when we beg for redemption finally. Redemption from what? From a world which we have defied now for 2,000 years, and we specifically have not gone Christian. We specifically have not thrown in the towel and celebrated Easter instead of Pesach. We specifically have not gone that route, and it has cost us rivers of blood. Rivers of blood as a result of it. And there's one other area of defiance where we have marked ourselves in a way that is totally indelible. It's irreversible. I mean, we've come to open heart surgery and we've come to all kinds of things in plastic surgery, but I don't think we know of any techniques where we can reverse the snip, the big snip. They haven't done this.
I read something in The Wall, I think it was The Wall by John Hersey, that they did try to...
They tried such things.
Yeah, they tried.
To be able to save their lives in the camp.
Right.
All right? There I understand. To save your life from such a butcher,
right,
from such animals, you can do anything. Anything! Mm-hmm. Whatever the mind can conceive of for Hatzolus Nefoshes is okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But at that point, when we go ahead and enter a bris, instead of worrying about the whitefish salad and the lox and whether there's going to be enough bagels and who's going to sit at the table first, if only we can stop and the men who hover over like a bunch of turkeys trying to see what they don't, what you know more about than the whole bunch of them put together, if they would only stop to think in a moment of meditation that we are about once again to defy the whole world. It'll take only an instant second. If you'd stop worrying about the crying and realize this rendezvous with our destiny at this moment, when the Mo'el says, Zeh ha-kisei shel Elio zochu elato, we have an honored guest here who isn't here. That, you know, if you were to walk in, this is his chair. You know what his name is? His name is Elio Anovi. You know why he's the honored guest? Because what we are about to do was taught to us by an Elio Anovi, that we will defy the entire world. And the best description comes to us in the stories that men like Rabbi Bronstein have done. You know, Bronstein is persona non grata behind the Iron Curtain. He's made tens of trips. You know what for? To secretly do bris. He laid his life on the line several times as a result of it, and you've got to give the man credit. You truly have to give the man credit. There was almost no other human being. And he trained some of them also. Trained others there to be able to do it. It is without question the supreme sacrifice to be able to defy an entire world. That's the character of Elio Anovi. You were going to say? Huh? So it's not on the knees, on the birkei hasandak, on the knees of the sandak that you put the child, but rather on a special chair, the chair of defiance. The same way you have what? You have the kos, the cup of Elio. Now let me just show you one other thing. The essence of Mila is the ability to draw blood, correct? Because that blood is the ink in which we write the covenant with God. When else was blood used to write a covenant with God? Okay. Do you know God didn't need the blood on the doorpost?
Mm-hmm.
He could have known exactly what the story is.
You know? I never questioned that.
Or, okay, who needed the blood? What for? They had their own problems they had to worry about. Who is it the sign for, huh?
Us, ourselves.
Are you ready to defy the world? Okay, if you're ready to defy the world, even to the point of saying that you'll give your life for it, your very blood. If you're ready, then you know what? Start walking in this direction, southeast, and you'll land up in 49 days around the Har Sinai, and you know what? You'll receive a Torah. And if you weren't able to commit yourself at that point to the Dam HaPesach, to that original gory situation where you took the representative idol of Egyptology, and you slaughtered it when it was holy. But that wasn't enough to slaughter the animal. I need you to smear a little blood on the doorpost. Not on the outside. And Shamsham Raphael Hirsch makes this point. It wasn't on the outside. It was on the inside. What would the Egyptians know the difference of whether the blood? They were busy with their makas b'choris. They were busy with their problems. There was a revolution going on. I've got to know. And when you'll be ready to lay your life on the line, then you're ready to be redeemed.
That's the Dam Pesach, and Dam Mila is the same thing. When you'll be ready to do a circumcision with these attendant thoughts, which means that the doctor is not doing a surgical precision, but you are writing once again a bris, a rendezvous with destiny. And you know what that's going to mean. That means your kids are going to be spat upon, and it means your kids are going to be kicked, and it means you're not going to be able to do everything that you want, and you're not going to be wherever you want. They'll remind you always whether you have a nose or whether you don't have a nose. When things go bad, you're going to be pointed to. When there's an oil crisis, they'll put a bumper sticker, your best friend will put a bumper sticker on her car, burn Jews, not oil. Okay, as they did? That's all within the Dam Bris. And that seat, which is empty, is called the Kisei Shel Eliyahu, the seat for Eliyahu HaNavi. It is the seat of defiance. Then, after you take the child off from the Kisei Shel Eliyahu, you go and you place the child on that seat. Not because the child is Eliyahu, but you know when you rub shoulders with an Eliyahu HaNavi, so to speak, that's the point. Something will rub off. May something rub off. And then you say the rest of the psukim over there, the entire thing. You go down to the bottom of the page. The moel, before operating, I don't like that word. You hear?
What would you use instead?
Before the bris.
Before the bris. Before the procedure. I don't like that word. Okay? And my friend Dr. Birnbaum wrote this in the 1940s. He's changed his tune, thank God, since. He's become a little more frum. Okay, and a little more sensitive. Again, thank God he doesn't wear masks. A genius of a man to have done what he did. The moel makes the bracha. Okay? Then the father makes a bracha also. You know why? Because it's his responsibility also. The only thing is he doesn't know how to do it. But he's there as a shliach. There is one bracha that seemingly, on the next page, 743 isn't there, on 743. You know that when you do a mitzvah once in a year, what do you say? Say Shachiyonah. Now, we're going to read the Megillah in a couple of days. We haven't read it in a year. We're going to say Shachiyonah. You're going to sit down, you're going to stand up 4 weeks after the Megillah and you're going to light candles for Pesach. When was the last time you lit candles for Pesach? A year ago. You say Shechionim.
Pesach is definitely a dirty word.
But it only has three letters.
I don't care. Until after Purim, it's a dirty word.
Yeah. Nonetheless. What? Pesach stuff is out.
Sure, for a week.
Okay, I happen to...
Give us a break, golly!
No, I happen to... I like that. Because that gives you time to realize, to weed out what's shoppable and what's viable and what has to be passed. All right, then. Well, so there you are. But we may have to take our signal from Foodtown and realize that... you have to start... You have to stop Pesach before Purim. There are no two ways about it. The question is Shechiyonu. Why doesn't the bracha of Shechiyonu occur? A machlokes, a division.
Hold on. That was my
next. Oh, wait a minute. I'll give you the answer to that first.
Oh, wait.
Okay, I'll give you the answer to that. The Shechiyonu should be here, without question. There is a division of opinion in procedure. And listen carefully to this. Ashkenaz, European Jews, generally don't say Shechiyonu because of the torment of not knowing if the child will make it through the procedure. So how can you say, thank God, Shechiyonu, that you made us live, the Kiyamonu, and you sustained us, V'Higiyonu, and you let us reach this point. Sfardim do say Shechiyonu. For whatever reason.
They have a boy.
Now let me ask you something. Doesn't this say two things? Number one, what treachery, what problems there must have been in the true procedures and how fortunate we are to be here now, where one out of 1,000 may have some slight problem. And secondly, doesn't it indicate that we, who are mainly Ashkenazim, ought to reevaluate our position? You all now have promised that you're no longer going to be nervous at a bris, whether it's yours or your grandchild or anyone. Not going to be. You've all promised, because you know what's coming off. You know what's doing. You know what the story is. No, isn't Shechayanu in order? Well, it's been my practice to tell a father that if you feel that Shechayanu is in order, that you should say Shechayanu. Okay. Yeah. Others disagree, and I understand the minhag. But is the basis of the minhag valid anymore? Are we that worried about Brisson today? Where, thank God, we have the ability to know what's doing, and if God forbid that there's the slightest problem, we have Moalim who are doctors also, and doctors who are Moalim. It's a minor procedure. It's a relatively minor procedure. And this is really the point. Having consulted, when I was studying, having consulted with several professors of anatomy and physiology, the way they described it to me is that the medical procedures that are attendant with circumcision, with bris, are far less complicated than the medical problems and procedures when you have to pull a tooth. Okay? Simple as that. But, you know, when you pull a tooth, you don't have the bagels and the lox and the white fish. You understand? And you have to worry about which brand of cream cheese to use and which bottle of milk to use and so on and so forth. Yeah, this is it. So far, we've had a mole, we've had a father, we've had a sandik who holds the baby. Elio Hanavi has his seat, there's no question about it. But there are two quiet witnesses to this whole procedure. We call them in Yiddish kvata and kvaterin. I've not done my homework to try to find out whether that's a Polish word or a Russian word or a Ukrainian word. I've not done my homework. But the kvater and the kvaterin are a pair. Usually a husband and wife, but it doesn't have to be a husband and wife. And these are the two people who bring the baby to the bris and take the baby back. You're not going to plunk down with your carriage right in shul if it's in shul, or you're not going to plunk down with the carriage right in the middle of the room at the house where you're doing it. The baby's upstairs, the baby is outside. The kvater brings the child. The kvaterin starts with the child, gives it over to the kvater, female then male, and then the kvater brings the child in. So you have two other honors. You have two other honors that are available there. And it doesn't show up at all in this. It is probably the closest equivalent to godparents. I don't know that we have really figured out what a godfather is. You see, or a godmother. What does a god tell me? Yeah, what does a godfather do or a godmother do? What are the This is not the kvater and the kvater.
And not Jewish.
Has nothing at all to do with the kvater and the kvater. Okay? Simple. Because al pi halacha, if anything happens to the parents, it is the responsibility of the Jewish community to take care of that child. It's what we call the responsibility of Beis Din. A community has to designate a so to speak, guard father and guard mother to guard over their interests and to raise them. But the kvatan and the kvatanin have one specific function and only that. And it ends the minute the bris is over. It starts the minute the bris begins. Finish. That's it.
And what is it?
To bring the baby and to take the baby back. That's all.
That's all.
That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Your statement, a way of giving people honors, has led to an interesting minhag. And that is to, if you want to invite, you'll soon see why I said if you want to invite two moalim. One to do the first half and the other to do the second half. That's when milah was not a charged commodity, was not a service for which we rendered a bill for professional services and mailed it with a 22-cent stamp. You understand what I'm saying? And there are still a few people who will do milah and will only do it milah without any charge. Very few. If you have two such moalim, the first part is done by one moal, meaning the pulling four of the foreskin and the mucous membrane, that's called a priya. Okay, and the second part, the actual chituch, the actual milah, is done by the second. This can be done today by a knowledgeable father with the use of that's correct. It can be split between the mole and the father. There's no question about it. Provided you don't tell the women in the family.
Well, I hope
that's all. Oh, that's bad. That's bad. That's bad. 7:43 after the bris, when it's all over and the baby is already Gemalad, and he's had it, you know, he's had it with everyone. You have the two brachos that are said, and the bottom paragraph is where you go ahead and you name the baby.
Want to give another kibbutz, you could do it there too, right?
Well, you can split up. You can split up. If you ever have a bris that you have to plan, I have a sheet that I'll let you have where I list the maximum of honors that you can give and where you can combine them. But simply, if you had all the lists over there, then you go ahead and simply fill in as you have it. But there are probably close to, you can, if you needed to honor 10 people in participation, you can get 10. Okay? I'll show you how. Number one is the kvater. Kvaterin is two. The third is the sandik. The fourth is a separate honor. Instead of the mo'el putting the child down on kiseh shel Elio, take someone else and put it down. Because now this is, and again, if you want, you probably now have a sensitivity to this one little gesture of kiseh shel Elio that is far deeper than all those yo-yos that you've ever been to with a bris. Okay? By merely placing that child on that kiseh shel Elio, do you realize what you do? You relive the entire life of Avraham Avinu, who defied an entire world. You are identifying and saying Omein, cheers, to an Elio Anovi who saved a nation from decimation. Okay? That one little gesture. There's four. Then the child has to be held by the one, when the brachas are said, these brachas that we're up to is five. It's called Amida Libracha, standing for the bracha. Why? Because you're going to name the child. The first bracha, Bari Pri HaGofen, and then the next four lines can be said by a sixth person. The naming of the child after the bracha, which begins the last paragraph, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, okay, is a seventh person. Okay? Afterwards, you're going to ask someone to bench. Is eight. I said ten, but there are more. Because if you will take a look in the benching on page 747, there is a special addition to the benching on page 747, which have six paragraphs, each one relating to the bris and the simcha of the bris that you just came through. And these are prayers. May God bless the child's father and mother, and God bless the sandik, and God bless the child, all right? And God bless the moel who did his job, and so on and so forth. So we were up to eight. Eight and six, I said ten. It's closer, 14. Up to 14 already. You have 14 honors that you can give out. All right? Someone has to say a Dvar Torah, right? If you have a minute before the 8:03 leaves for the city, okay? So you got 15 already in terms of participation. Now, when you don't have, or when you don't know that these things can be given out, so the mole or the rabbi goes ahead and shoots straight through it.
Yeah, simple. Of course you have somebody else stuck in there.
Yeah, the one who cleans up in the kitchen.
No, the husband and wife, if the wife is in need, she can't hand it right to the husband, you see, and then you have somebody else.
Well,
so, I mean, we can add.
You can add, but let's leave that. That is, you know, one of your technicalities.
No, it's just...
So twins? Twins? You have that. You can add one. You have two brits and you have two names to give. Okay, and two brachos.
So you have...
And two sandiks.
You finish one before you start the other, in the case of a brit.
Yeah.
What do you mean, do you finish
one? I'll say all the brachos for each one individually.
Yeah,
you have to.
Finish the whole thing? Then you turn page, turn back to the back. Let's go. Double header. All right, simple. Don't you finish the first baseball game, the 9 innings, before you get to the second? The answer is yes. That's all. Finish. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. We go on in our next session to Pidyon HaBen, which is not going to be, which is not going to be anything, nothing as exciting as this, and we'll just have to come back to normal in the conveying of information.
Sandik.
What about Sandik?
Can one man be the Sandik for two children in the same family? There's problems with that, isn't there?
What?
There is a minhag.
I was told my father couldn't be the sandik for David. He was the sandik for Mati.
Yeah,
I was told he couldn't be the sandik for David.
Let me explain. There is a very ancient minhag that when you have the sandik for one child in your family, you no longer give him the honor for anyone else.
Anyone else
in that family, your family. The reason is as follows. It's a very simple reason. It's based on a statement in the Medrash that a sandik, the importance of the sandik, is the equivalent of a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, who worshipped in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, and did one thing. Brought the ketores. The ketores were the incense that they burned. It wasn't the karbonos, it wasn't the sacrifices. It was the incense that they burned. And the Gemara figures out that no Kohen Gadol was able to do it twice because the honors were so great that it was shifted around constantly. It's a difficult situation, and you have to understand the parallel, just like you understand the parallel with Elio Anovi. Let me explain what the Ketores was. In just one sentence, there were different kinds of spices that were put into this incense that was burned. Every one of the spices represented another segment of the totality of the Jewish people. So that when the spices were burned before God, is what like saying, God, please look at the smoke that arises and look at this pleasant fragrance called the Jewish experience and remember us. Here you have a sandik who is bringing another child into the totality of Bnei Yisrael. So he's like the Kohen who went ahead and sacrificed the ketores. In the same way, the Kohen didn't do it more than once, so too, you don't give it to a sandik more than once. It's based on that symbolism. It isn't that there's anything wrong with the sandik. However, there have been experiences where this has been violated. There definitely have been experiences where this has been violated. So that in certain cases where you don't have another tzaddik, for whatever reason, can the father be a tzaddik? Technically, yes. Technically, yes. We just, however, we just look for a minion in the presence of whatever, to have a minion. So there are other people. What do you do, however, when you have to mala secretly, which was done constantly? Then all of these symbolisms go, and, you know, they fall by the wayside, and that's it. Any other notions before we close the book on mila? Have you been practicing at home?
No.
I go into the nursery every day and just do a couple just to get out of the way, you know.
I want you not to forget the technique. I want you to practice. Because then it'll come the next bris. You want to, you know, you're pros. You have to be pros. And the only way a pro remains a pro is by constant practice. If you need a little doodad to take home to practice on because you ran out of tubing, I'll let you have that.